Welcome to Profiles on WFIU. Our guest today is Vincent Mo, IU graduate and, indeed, one of China's leading entrepreneurs. Vincent is chairman of the board of Sofun Holdings, a company which he founded in 1999. That was just a few years after Vincent completed an MA in economics at Indiana University. Today, still in his 40s, Vincent's personal assets place him among China's leading entrepreneurs. In fact, he's actually been named Entrepreneur of the Year. Vincent, welcome to Bloomington.
Thank you.
So, Vincent, your hometown in China, where you grew up, is in a very beautiful province. Tell us about the province.
Well, the province is called the Guangxi province, which is the very south part of China. And there is a very beautiful city, which is Guilin city, and which has about 600,000 people, and which is recognized as the most beautiful city in China. You know, you can see mountains directly come up from the water.
In fact, I'm sure many people who look at travel magazines see this incredibly beautiful sight
exactly.
of the water and the islands and mountains that rise out of the water. So that's a great place to grow up.
Exactly.
How did you first hear about IU? How did you decide to come to Bloomington to study?
Well, frankly, back to 19 years ago, I thought about to have my education here in the States because
yes.
the U.S. has the most attractive education program here. So I just looked through different reference books and found out definitely IU is on my top list.
That's wonderful.
So I applied to the economics department here at IU, and I got accepted, and with the best thing is with a scholarship, so that's very important to me.
So, Vincent, you had 2 degrees before coming to Indiana University. You studied at 2 Chinese universities, right?
Yes.
Tell us which they were and what the degrees were.
Well, I got my bachelor degree from South China University of Technology, which is located in Guangzhou, close to Hong Kong. And after 2 years of work with the central government, and I also attended the base school of Tsinghua University, which is recognized as the best school in China.
Right. Now, tell me about living in Bloomington. You first went into Eigenmann.
Yeah, it's a very memorable experience here. I was to come for the 4th semester,
yes.
but because I was engaged in Pakistan, so I delayed a half a year until December 28th, which is, the date is still very clear in my mind.
Yes.
December 28th, I arrived at Bloomington.
Yes.
Well, at that time, it's empty.
Yeah, no one was there.
Yeah, no one was here. And so I felt very lonely at that time. And it's very hard to find a place to even to buy, things.
Yeah. But you settled down and proceeded to do your degree in the economics department. And in fact, I think there's an interesting story. Even while you were a student, you tried to do a new venture with Oliver Winery. So while you were studying here, you thought you would begin to get opportunities to trade Oliver wines in China. And you tried to set it into place, but because you were still a student, you didn't finish doing it.
You're right. That was another interesting story for me when I was here 19, 18 years ago at IU.
Yeah.
So people in China, they said, my blood is with entrepreneurship.
Yes.
So the first year when I was here, I just, other than my studies here, and I just look around where how the Bloomington looks like and
yes.
What kind of things were around Bloomington. So I found out there is an Oliver Winery here, which is actually at that time owned by a law professor of Indiana University. So I went to the winery, had a very good taste of the wine. And then I come back to Professor Oliver and I said, I was thinking about to ship the olive wine to China because 19, 18 years ago, wine in China was not that widely accepted. But I saw the potential
yes.
because of this 1.5 1.3 billion, you know, people. That's the consumption, you know, yes. power or potential.
Yeah.
So so Oliver, Professor Oliver, he had been very supportive, and he said, "Yeah, it's great. Why not? We can do it together." So I went back to China during the summertime and registered a company in my hometown, Guilin City,
yes.
and studied it. But, you know, I was still a student.
Yes.
And after I studied the company in Guilin, hired 5-6 people and tried to expand the business in China. But it's not easy. You know, startup, it's always not easy. So I had to be back here in Bloomington to continue my
studies
and my PhD program here. Then the company, you know, went to nowhere. So that's my first start.
You actually visited the winery yesterday.
You're right. I went there and met the son of Professor Oliver, Bill Oliver. And
yeah.
He heard I was coming, so we had a very good chat at the Oliver Winery yesterday. And hopefully we can, you know, in the near future can realize some of my dream, you know, 18 years ago.
Yeah. It's interesting to also see how a career develops. You left IU. And you had various jobs, including with Dow Jones, right?
Yes.
And the Dow Jones job led to other jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually you had the inspiration for your new business.
Yes.
Sun Fu, which has become a very important business in China today. Would you tell us a little bit about how this evolved and how you were inspired to do the business and the progression from Dow Jones to the company?
Yeah, it's interesting thing to start, you know, talking about my career here in the U.S. and back to China. I had my PhD program here, and after I finished all my courseworks and passed all the qualifying examinations, within 3 years, and I fortunately I got a job with the Dow Jones system.
Yes.
It's Telerace, Dow Jones Telerace, which is the real estate information business of Dow Jones. After about 3 years with Dow Jones, I was promoted to a general manager of Dow Jones Telerace in Asia and the China area, although I was based in the States. So it gave me a lot of opportunities to know lots of things in the States and lots of things in China. So I, you know, after 3 years working with Dow Jones, and I thought probably it's time for me to start up something. And I was 31, 32 at that time, and it's time to do something, you know, for the next 30 years.
Yes.
So, and if I come China and the U.S., these two greatest countries in the world, if I can combine these two greatest countries together and make the best use of their merits, that will create something meaningful for the world and definitely for China. So that's the original thought about starting up something. And I looked at Dow Jones, Reuters, Anderson at that time, McKinsey, all of these information consulting companies, and I knew there wasn't anything like that in China. So I thought, why not maybe I can start up something and build it up to a worldwide brand name, you know, like Dow Jones, Reuters, or Anderson McKinsey at that time. So that's the start, actually, of my thought. So, originally. Yeah.
So Sofun then evolved as a major company after you had left Dow Jones and you set up your own operation.
Right, because I was with Dow Jones Information, real estate information part,
yes.
So I went back to China and founded my own company,
yes.
which is related to real estate information. But there was a good thing, which is the internet, you know, in the late 1990s, and so it's a good time to start something with the internet. So I just combined, you know, the internet, the new tools with the traditional real estate information, and then make it into the leading, you know, real estate websites in China. That's sofun.com.
And you've had a lot of capital injected into this company. I was very impressed with the amount that Telstra put into your company. I mean, this is in 2006, they put $254 million into the company.
Yes, sofun.com, or
yes.
now we call it Sofun Holding, it's a typical startup, you know,
yes.
supported by venture capitals.
Yeah.
We had a 3 rounds of funding during its past 10 years experience. The first round of money actually it came from two U.S. prestigious companies, Goldman Sachs and IDG, which is the International Data Group, the Boston company. So they funded with about $5 million in early 2000. And then the second funding is from a French company called Trader Classified Media in 2004. And it's $22.5 million. And the third one, as you just mentioned, it's in 2006, a somewhat bigger funding, which is $254 million, and funded by Telstra, the Australian major telecom company, also a Fortune 500 company. So that $254 million funding was the biggest in 2006 in China.
Tell me, if I'm living in Beijing and I want to use your company, what do I do? What do I find out? How do I, as an individual, get results from what you provide?
SoFun.com, the website, it's our main asset. And what you can do with SoFun, you can look for new home if you want to buy a new home. And you can look for resale home, if you want to buy resale properties.
Yes.
And then after you buy whether it's new or resale, you are going to do some furnishing of your apartment or houses. And then we have the home furnishing sector on the website. And after you move in, actually, we have the community service, which is also online. And so you can rely on SoFun.com to do your daily, livings. So it's what we do here is everything home on the internet. That's SoFun.com is doing and going forward in the near future.
And you've had a lot of hits on your site, a lot of people. I mean, I'm impressed. You're one of the most popular sites in China.
Yeah, it has been. And, SoFun.com is actually China's most visited real estate websites or home-related websites. It's actually also the world's most visited real estate websites.
Yeah,
so because of the population in China.
How many employees do you have?
Currently, we have around 3,000 people scattered in 50-plus cities in China. SoFun.com, it covers more than 100 cities in China, over 1 million populations.
So you have over 3,000 employees.
And, yes.
And you're operating in a wide number of cities. That's very impressive. You're actually also training some of your employees. You have a training facility, you mentioned.
We do. Because the growth of the company, SoFun, well, the most important thing is really the talent, the employees, whether they are capable, they have creativity, they have an innovation mind to do things in the process. So ever since the start of the company, especially 5 years ago, we started our own management school within the company. So we call it the SoFun Management School. So all the executives, if they are going to be promoted to new positions or to take new responsibilities, they're going to be trained by our internal management school. At the same time, other than internal training, we also send our best performers or executives to other countries, including the United States and Australia and Hong Kong and Japan to get trained. This time I'm here in IU. Actually, I'm in the process of talking with the Center for Real Estate Studies at the Kelly Business School. We're trying to establish some training program for the senior researchers and the executives within our system in China to be trained here at IU.
That's very exciting, and that's a wonderful thing. And most of your executives, I assume, are now Chinese nationals.
You're right.
That's very impressive. Maybe we should take a little break at this point and to welcome you back to Indiana University. Perhaps we'll have some music. And what would be more appropriate than one of our own musicians, very famous Hoagy Carmichael. So we'll listen to some music to celebrate your return after how many years, Vincent?
Well, I left here in early 94, I think, 15 years.
15 years.
Yeah.
So an appropriate musical welcome.
Thank you very much.
And now the purple dusk of twilight time steals across the meadows of my heart. High up in the sky, the little stars climb, always reminding me that we're apart. You wander down the lane and far away, leaving me a song that will not die. Love is now the stardust of yesterday.
Well, welcome back, Vincent. We are continuing our discussion about your life and your work in China and your connections with IU and the marvelous business that you've developed. Let's talk about business in China a little more. I heard an interesting discussion the other day about trust, how you trust people that work for you, and how you trust your colleagues and the people that you make deals with. Talk to me a little bit about that, because I'm sure our listeners would be interested to hear more.
You know, my philosophy or my opinion is we need to trust the people. We need to trust our partners. We need to trust our employees upfront. So that's very important. Mm-hmm. But we need to keep the open-minded in a way to handle with different parties. But in the process, it's really a building up process of the trust. And, you know, as I said during the conference, we have to we're going to trust, but we're going to trust the people who goes in our way in the according to the rules of the game. So yes, that's the way we are going to trust the people. In doing business in China, it's really, and actually, it's not only in China, anywhere in the world, trust is the fundamental thing. You have to trust your partners to do things. So we have to keep our mind open for that. You know, trust, sometimes probably you cannot get absolutely 100% trust, but we need to be very clear for something very fundamental we have to be trusted for. So that's the way we handle our business in China. You know, I've been keeping Shufang open with all kind of, investors and partners. That's why we had, in the past 10 years, we had different investors in Shufang, because we trust them and they also trust us in some way. They brought in, contributions to the company, and we also give them back a very good return. So Shufang has been enjoying a very good, relationship with our investors. To our employees, my way is that we have to trust our employees, and we're going to trust them and believe they can do the best for the company. But if things happen, if something bad, unexpected happen, and definitely we are going to correct that.
Mm-hmm. This question of trust is also important in terms of your partners, and your partners have come from different parts of the world. How do you build a relationship with a partner from another country? Does it take time? How do you achieve the kind of relationships that are creative and innovative for your business? And back to that notion of trust.
It's a very challenging task, actually, in the process of Shufang's growth in the past 10 years. As you know, we have investment partners from the U.S., Australia, and European countries. And definitely we have lots of partners in China, and it is a very challenging task to keep the partners in one group or in one direction. Mm-hmm. What we have been doing is that I think there is one thing which is very important, is that before we do something, before we set up a strategic relationship or partnership, we have to make clear the rules of the game. What we can do, what we cannot do, and what's the goal we're going to achieve in some period of time. Mm-hmm. And as long as, all the parties related, everybody behaves according to the rules of the game, and eventually, actually, we can always get to our, common interest.
Tell me about a typical day in your business life.
Well, I travel a lot because, I travel globally, internationally, and mostly it's inside China. As you know, we have more than 50 cities scattered in 30 provinces in China, so I have to go to different cities to see our operations. So travel is part of my life, of my working style. But specifically every day, I would say you know, meetings one after another. That's most of my job, and talking is my job.
So,
talking to my shareholder, talking to my board member, and talking to my executives and my employees. So that's very typical of my daily life. And of course, I also spend comparatively much of time on research. I'm doing, you know, the preparing for the future of SoFund.
And you actually have an interest in research. You have some new directions with teams of people that you're working with in your business.
You're right. And SoFund has a very strong research, fundamental. Actually, we have more than 200, full-time researchers within our group. We are the biggest real estate research, group institutions in China. We publish China's real estate statistical yearbook. We also publish China's real estate index system. So those are the symbolic industry guidelines for China's real estate industry.
Where do you find your researchers?
It's a good question. You know, I did a lot of research when I was in China. Before I came to IU, actually, I published things. I was affiliated with the top advisory body to China's cabinet, sort of doing policy research before I came here. So I like research, and that's the reason. And SoFund has a very strong research fundamental. To find the best researcher in China and globally, actually, it's a tough issue. So the top researchers in our institution in SoFund, within SoFund, some of them actually are educated in the States and in Singapore, in other countries. That's one of the sources we attract the researchers to our group. And we also hire from the best schools of China, the doctorate students and the master degree students.
Excellent. Tell me, I was seeing something on CNN that Vincent Mo brought a delegation recently to the United States of 20 potential investors. Very interesting. And this is a new direction for you, and I think an important one. And CNN said that your plan, the group that you brought, visited in February 24th to March 5th to major American cities, New York, Boston, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Las Vegas. This is an exciting new direction for you.
Well, it is something exciting and something interesting. We know U.S. market, the property market, the real estate market has been in a crisis in the past, 1 year, 6 months. And the price has been dropped a lot in some of the U.S. markets. Like Las Vegas, it's 30-40% down. And for some foreclosure properties, even more, half of the price. So there are actually some Chinese citizens, they like to have some exposure, have to have some assets here in the U.S. Property or home, residential properties is their first choice. So we got requests from SoFund's registered members. They said, why not SoFund organize them to come to the States to buy properties together. It's to make sense simpler. It's like a one-stop shop they got all the help from. So that's 1 month ago, and it was a very hot topic among global media, including CNN, and you mentioned actually, including PBS, including ABC, BBC. All of them reported the event because it's the first time a group of Chinese citizens, they came to the States to buy properties.
Was there interest by Americans and others?
You mean the property buyers?
Yeah.
The interest in buying properties, actually, we did some survey among the 500 applicants who applied to come to the States to buy properties. The price range is from half million to 800,000 million. Yeah. And they would like to buy properties around good education areas, because about one-third of the property buyers, they would like their kids, their sons, their daughters to come to the States to get education.
And were there sellers, American sellers, that were eager to meet your potential buyers?
It got interest from all parties, especially the sellers, the brokers, the agents. They showed strong enthusiastic attitude toward the property buyers from China.
Yeah.
So we got calls and we got emails, we got contacts through the embassy, and they have been offered to support, you know, all kinds of listings and to the property buyers. They also offered to support when the group was here in the States.
Excellent. And you plan some future trips?
As I said, you know, we have, up to today, we have more than 500 Chinese who applied to buy properties in the States through Sofan. And each group, we can have only 20 to 40 people. So if we have to arrange all of them to come to the States to buy properties, and probably we need to arrange more than 10 groups.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's impressive. In addition to your work in the business, you've also been involved as a chair of a panel of a national association in China, real estate organization. So you give service beyond your own business interests to the national interests.
You're right, because of our strong research background, you know, our authoritative information system in China. And, of course, I worked with the central government before. Sofan has established a very close relationship with the central government, the policymaking bodies there. Uh-huh. We have been cooperating with the construction ministry and on the policies, long-term policy of China's real estate industry. I am the Secretary General of a committee which is in charge of this in China through China Real Estate Association, which is the top quasi-government
body. The Real Estate
body.
Association.
Right.
Yeah.
And we also, together with the China Statistics Bureau, which is the National Statistics Bureau, you know, we publish together the Statistics Yearbook, which is widely a reference guideline for China's real estate industry.
I'm amazed at how busy you are. I mean, I can't keep up, because by the time you've dealt with your own business and the national, what about your family? Do they feel you're flying all over the world all the time?
Well, it's we need to learn how to balance business and the family life. I love my family, and I try my best to be, you know, back home every week, at least every weekend. So I've been, you know, the family was in the States, and now I moved the family back to China so that I can see the family every week.
Oh, and I remember once when we were talking in China, your daughter was attending school in the United States, right? High school?
You're right. My daughter was born here, and then we moved back to China, and then she's attending boarding school.
In the United States?
In Connecticut, yeah.
Does she feel she's an American, or is she drawn into the energy and excitement of China?
Well, this is what she told me. She's 15 now.
Yes.
And she told me when she is with Americans, and she feels that she is Chinese.
When she's with Chinese,
she feels she's American.
So, yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
This might be a good point for us to take another break, and again to celebrate your coming back to Indiana University.
Thank you.
Perhaps we might have one of our students from the PRC who is studying at the Jacobs School of Music, which is a great school of music. We'll have an excerpt of some music from a student.
Great.
Production support for Profiles comes from Smithville, a locally owned business serving central and southern Indiana since 1922, with residential and business internet, voice, and security services. Smithville, local pride, global technology. Information at smithville.net. And the Funeral Chapel of Bloomington, providing funeral and crematory arrangement services for the chapel, church, and graveside. The Funeral Chapel, to honor and commemorate. 333-4400 or online at pdcfuneralchapel.com.
We continue our discussion, and we're delighted that we have the opportunity to hear about your achievements. We did speak about your family. I'd like also to share with our listeners a little more about life in China, living, your day-to-day living. We talked about running the business.
Yes.
But you have to navigate that traffic in Beijing, and there are all kinds of issues in terms of getting the kids to school and getting around the city and making sure that you have a social life. Tell us a little more about that side of your.
Yeah, that's, you know, Bloomington. I love Bloomington. It's a very beautiful and quiet town. When I was driving with President Michael McRaby around the campus, and we have to stop at the traffic lights for, you know, 1 minute or something. And I just joked, you know, it's much better than, you know, comparing to Beijing. You know, you're going to have traffic in 10 minutes, and even more than that, you cannot even move. So in China, living in China, there are more than 150 cities over a population of 1 million.
Yeah.
So that's, you know,
1 million in each of 150 cities.
Right. That's the biggest difference, you know, comparing to many other countries. Yeah. So traffic definitely is a problem in China. You know, for me to walk every day takes about an hour from my place, you know, east side to the west side of the office. And for the kids to go to kindergarten or go to school, it's going to take another 45 minutes or an hour to there. So, well, traffic is one of the daily life.
You know, people don't realize also the kinds of suburbs that have emerged in cities like Beijing. I've been impressed. I mean, some of these could be major residential areas in California or with beautiful houses, grounds. Have you seen this evolving in terms of where people are living?
You're right. People, you know, with some assets, you know, I would say some people with enough money, they would like to move out of the city to live in the suburb areas with their single houses there. It is expanding, actually, especially in Beijing and China, because there are some of them, like people for, you know, like us, you know, we returned back from the Western countries to China, who like to live in quiet places in suburb areas. Mm-hmm. And there are also, I would say, a percentage of Chinese people, you know, rich people, they also would like to stay in quiet places. So suburb areas and single houses in China has been expanding very much in the past, you know, 10 years.
Excellent. Tell me a little more also about the Olympic Games. I think it would be remiss of me not to at least touch on the Olympic Games. This is in your city, in your home city. What's your overall impression now that the Games are over? And
Yeah, it was an amazing game. You know, I was there with my family at the opening ceremony and also the closing ceremony. So it's very enjoyable, and it's I would say it's a great grand opening. It gives out the history and the culture of the Chinese in the past, you know, more than 2,000 years. So it's amazingly organized, with more than 10,000 people participating in the opening ceremony. I mean, the players, the show players. Yeah. So
these were the athletes.
Right. Other than the athletes.
Other than the athletes.
Uh-huh. And there are just about 100, you know, stats heads in the stadium, in the nest. So that's amazing. Also, another good thing, and, well, another special thing, it's very hot.
Yeah, at the heat of the summer at that
time. Yeah, right,
time.
Exactly.
Vincent, at this point, I really think it would be useful for us to talk about something that's on everybody's mind. That's the worldwide economic crisis. And both China and the United States have a very special relationship.
Yes.
They're both really, in many ways, interdependent.
Yeah.
And both have stimulus packages.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about how you look at the current economic crisis and the role of the U.S. and the role of China in this.
Well, it is interesting topic. We have been on this topic for some time. I would say in different ways. I think China depends a lot on the U.S. for its export. And, of course, on the other hand, the U.S. also relies in somewhat on China's buying treasury bonds. So China is now the biggest treasury bonds owner of the U.S. So it's integrated together. So both sides relies on the other side to try to get out of the current crisis. The China side and the Prime Minister of China, Wen Jiabao, he said once, China does not and did not have a crisis now. And China has been affected by the crisis in the U.S. or in the other countries. So I think partially it's true. You know, we just had the statistic out for quarter one of this year. China's GDP grew in quarter one 6.1%, you know, positive numbers. So that's actually it's the worst number for China in the past 20 years. But 6.1% GDP growth is probably the best
in the world.
The best for the U.S. or other advanced countries in the past 20 years.
It's the envy of the world.
So that's why I think the Prime Minister is somewhat he's right. You know, China did not or has not had a crisis, but definitely China's economy has been affected by the worldwide crisis. China's export has dropped at more than 20%. And I would say more than 10,000 factories, manufacturing in China has closed their door. It has been affected a lot. And real estate market in China has also been under pressure. You know, price has been down about 10% in the past 1 year, and the transaction volume is especially affected. You know, it's the worst time, it's 50% down, the transaction volume. So that's the situation in China crisis. But here in the States, there is one thing we sometimes, when we are in China, we discuss is that, the U.S., it started with the real estate, actually, the mortgage crisis things, and many people, they couldn't afford to pay back the mortgages sometime. And then affected all the financial institutions here, and then to some manufacturing sectors like the automobile sectors. There is one thing interesting here we have been debating in China. So who should be responsible for this? You know, who made this? You know, who created this? That's something interesting. We haven't seen a lot from the U.S. government or federal authorities, in the officials who are responsible for these regulations or policies. In China, sometimes if something happened in China, bad things happen, and, one, two ministers probably need to step down. Mm-hmm. And, to be responsible for the bad things. But during the past 1 year, when we experienced the crisis here in the States, we haven't seen a lot of things similar to that. That's interesting.
This is a new phenomenon.
Yeah.
You know, this notion of the GDP is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And 6.1% is enviable. But China was anticipating an 8%.
For the whole year.
For the whole year.
Yes.
So that will have some implications, I assume, for internal unemployment or for other kinds of issues?
It is. Chinese government, they have been very active in trying to stimulate the economy. Mm-hmm. They are afraid of the affection of the crisis in other parts of the world. China is still a developing country, and it's still a faster-growing country. And it needs the growth to cope with all kinds of potential problems or existing problems. So it's a different country. China is not that mature, economically or socially, in many ways. So the growth is needed in China to keep things moving on and to keep the employment rate low and to make sure the social stability is there. That's the most important and fundamental issue for China.
In fact, people look at China and think of the coastal cities, which like Shanghai, which are booming, but forget that there are other regions in China that essentially need substantial growth. And that's where we have to begin to also see activities focused.
You're right. Actually, some analysts and economists, they divide China into three classes or three layers. And Beijing, Shanghai, these big cities, and they are really, you know, comparable to the most advanced cities in the whole world. And some other cities like Wuhan and Chengdu, all of these cities with a population over 5 million, below 10 million, and they are similar to some other, second-tier countries in the world. And there is a vast majority of China, many small towns, villages, and rural areas. They are really in a very early stage development. You know, we call it still in the third world, situation. So when I give recommendations to my foreign friends, if they are going to visit China, I suggest them to visit Beijing, Shanghai, definitely for sure. And at the same time, I also suggest them to go to pick one or two rural areas and to have a sightseeing there, to feel the real China, the heart of China. So China is I think it's still in its early stage development. It's very unevenly developed within China.
Part of the stimulus is to really put money into railway connections, new trains, and that also will change part of the characteristics
exactly.
Of the country.
That's in the direction.
Right. Vincent, let me ask a couple of questions that bring us back to IU. You're a graduate of this university.
Yes.
Are there opportunities now for our graduates? Let's take the Chinese graduates first. To return to China, would you tell a student finishing a master's degree or a doctorate, come back home, there's opportunity for you?
Yeah, I'm coming back home here today.
Yes.
And of course, you know, I also go back home to China 6 years ago when I lived in the U.S. for 10 years. You know, one of my purpose of this trip to IU is that I'm trying to attract, talents from IU to work for our company so far, and also to go back to China to be involved with the rapid development there in China. You know, I strongly recommend IU graduates, whether they are from China from America or from other countries. China is a place to go, and China has lots of opportunities. And sometimes, as we say, in China, as long as any place, whatever you want to do, as long as you insist on doing it, and eventually you can get the oil out. So,
and the areas would be the sciences, I assume, and information technology. Are these the business? Are these the areas that you would encourage people to return?
I would say China is a fast-developing market and place. And whatever you do, it doesn't matter too much, but you need to focus on doing something and then do it consistently, doing it for some time, and then you're going to get a good return.
Opportunities, with your own life.
Right, exactly.
That's a final idea. In all of these interests, we've been talking about business, but I understand you're also interested in history and culture on a personal level.
You're right. Actually, most recently, when we probably getting older, so we have lots of other things. We have done a lot of research on different things. I'm also involved with some social work in China, trying to be supportive to different sectors other than business. Personally, I most recently I have been thinking about to do some research on the history of international relationships of China. Of course, before the establishment of the new China in 1994, before sort of what's happening in the past more than 1,000 years, China's history of international relationship with other countries before 1994, it could be very helpful to China, going forward, going on.
And looking at the past and learning from the past.
Right, exactly.
Well, this might be a wonderful point for us also to get some music, and maybe it would be good as we talk about the past to have some selections of traditional Chinese music.
That would be great.
Our guest today has been Vincent Mo from Beijing, China, IU graduate, business entrepreneur, and a good friend of the university. This has been Profiles on WFIU.
The program you have just heard was recorded in April of 2009. The studio engineer and technical producer was Michael Paskash. Production support for Profiles comes from Smithville, a locally owned business serving central and southern Indiana since 1922, with residential and business internet, voice, and security services. Smithville, local pride, global technology. Information at smithville.net. And the Funeral Chapel of Bloomington, providing funeral and crematory arrangement services for the chapel, church, and graveside. The Funeral Chapel, to honor and commemorate. 333-4400 or online at pdcfuneralchapel.com. Copies of this or other programs can be obtained by calling 812-855-1357. Information about Profiles, including archives of past shows, can be found on our website, wfiu.org. Profiles is a production of WFIU and comes from the studios at Indiana University. Christina Kuzmich, executive producer. Please join us again for the next edition of Profiles. For WFIU, thanks for listening.